Kia ora and welcome to Outspoken. I'm Todd Nile. Aucklanders this year face a debate unique in this country. Are they prepared to pay $300 million a year extra in new taxes or charges to fund transport projects which the city leaders say are crucial but otherwise unaffordable? Are the city leaders ignoring other cheaper solutions? And for the rest of the country, is this the first sign that the system of funding local government is struggling to cope? Joining me on Outspoken is the Mayor of Auckland, Len Brown, Patrick Reynolds from the website Transport Blog, and David Shand, who in 2007 chaired the Local Government Rates Inquiry and was also a member of the Royal Commission, which reported on Auckland's amalgamation. Good morning to you, gentlemen.
Morning.
Morning. Morning.
Len Brown, you're the Mayor. You're going to have to lead this. The choices being put to Aucklanders are basically higher petrol taxes and higher rates on the one side, or the other option, paying for each trip on the motorway. The other option, of course, do nothing and face what we're told are dire consequences. It's an extraordinary ask for a politician.
Yeah, it is. But I've campaigned on and been elected really on a platform that, with Auckland finally united, it's really time to step up and actually address one or two of the issues that we've never done for decades. And so now we are, and transport is the major issue, a constant refrain, fix the transport, Len. So we're going to the community this year with a debate with those options that you reflected. On the basis that for dealing with our transport challenges, we see a $12 billion funding gap between our rates and our taxes. And that gap, in my view, needs to be met with some real clarity and with some pace. And so those two options and choices are the ones that we see as being most appropriate that would deliver a full integrated transport solution.
So Aucklanders will get to see two lists, the list that can be paid for normally and the list that the new one will get. Patrick Reynolds, Transport Blog pushes public transport. You know, a lot of the projects that are on the extra list that has somehow got to be funded are public transport projects. So are Aucklanders just going to have to bite the bullet if they want to get this stuff and pay up?
Well, first of all, we'd like to take a slightly high altitude look at this. There is a lot of money that is spent in Auckland on transport. But say if we take the next 3 years, for example, NZTA will spend $2.2 billion on the state highways in Auckland, directed by the government, projects chosen by the government that aren't on this list. We don't get any input on them. Over that period, Auckland Transport will have $300 million a year, or about $200 million of which is on, you know, road renewals and things that just have to happen. So basically we have one super funded, overfunded end of the transport system and one scratching around for pennies. And it's interesting, the one that is growing in demand is the one without the money.
Right, so we'll come back to that. So you think the money's probably there. David Shand, the review that you chaired concluded that property rates as the main source of council funding, this is the work back in 2007, wouldn't be sustainable by 2017. That's a couple of years away. Is that what we're starting to see here, is the ability of rates to pay for everything running out?
What we said about rates was that they should remain the main source of local government revenue. There's a lot of good things about rating as a system of revenue raising, and councils have a lot of flexibility in terms of the way they make they can distribute the burden across different parts of the community. What we were saying was that for some sections of the community, there will be real affordability problems unless some changes are made, and that includes fixing the rates rebate scheme. I might say we made some recommendations, none of which were implemented. We made recommendations for the Crown to pay full rates, for the local authority petroleum tax to be increased, and for extra funding for water infrastructure. None of those were done. But if they had been done, that would have also helped address this burden of rates. Because we do have a perception amongst the community that rates are too high. I'm not sure that that's necessarily true. When you look at the fact that rates are on average 4% of household income. So they're not all that big, although they're very visible,
Okay.
And that's one of the problems.
Well, let's have a look at what is going to be talked about as those extra options coming up in the year. Regular motorway users, by some of the calculations, could be paying up to $1,300 more in a year in charges. If you go for the other options, an average household is possibly going to be paying $350 more a year in rates and fuel taxes. Does that really seem to you guys, does that seem like a fair
but
ask?
Also, Todd, that's only one option. That's a drive-a-lot person, your first example.
Yeah, that's the top end.
Yes, but these charges may incentivise a person to alter their patterns of behaviour, and many people will be able to avoid totally paying these charges. I mean, our view about the motorway charges is the best thing about them, is especially if they are time-based, is the way that we can actually get much more efficiency out of the motorway network. It can be a higher charge at the peak. It basically can peak smooth, and we've got huge lane widths that are empty outside of a couple of peaks in the day. You know, 4 hours out of 24, the motorway system is vastly over capacity. So even that spreading can work. People will change behaviour. But there are concerns about local roads getting flooded and the fact that our public transport system is deeply immature and needs this investment almost before this can happen. It almost needs a CRL to open, and then we could do motorway charging.
Yeah, look, we could wait a long time for that to actually happen. I think one of the things that I've debated with Aucklanders for the last 4 years is, look, you can either pay for petrol sitting on the motorway while your car's idling away in a car park, or secondly, you can actually pay that same amount of money towards the real investment into our public transport system to complement our roading system and ensure we have a full integrated system for our people to access. I guess the thing about motorway charges against extra taxes and a petrol charge is that it does encourage people to take other choices aside from the motorway, whether it's the side roads or, and in particular, public transport. You know, I mean, my very simple focus is to give people a choice where they can utilise public transport, cycleways, walkways as their primary source and leave the roads primarily for freight and commercial traffic. And if we arrive at that point, get more people into public transport, presently about 20% in public and active transport, then I think you've got a city that is really starting to move and it's good for commerce.
And it is happening in that direction.
I just think we should note the work that was done by the independent advisory group that the Mayor and Council set up, which did a lot of the detailed work on these options.
And this is the group that's actually delivered these as the final workable options to kick around.
Indeed. I mean, these are the options on which the budget options are based, as I understand it. And their conclusion was that the motorway charge was a fairer system of doing it and had much greater economic benefits. But on the other hand, fairness is in the eye of the beholder, and low-income people might feel that this would disadvantage them. And as the Mayor says, fairness in this case means that people have to have options. If you don't use the motorway, you've got to be able to have the alternative of good public transport or reasonable local roads.
So, David Chen, does it seem fair to you, your group, you know, in that work in 2007 rejected a lot of ideas for different reasons. Are these ideas that you would consider workable?
Oh, absolutely. The option, which is the rates development contribution petrol tax option, is involves more different moving parts, if you like.
But it's simpler.
As I understand it, it would involve about a 4.6% increase in residential rates beyond the current year. I have to say, on the face of it, that doesn't seem to me to be too unreasonable to fix the problems that Auckland has, which have been accumulating for years. But some people will push back, particularly because it's associated with a move to a uniform rating system where some people are getting hurt by the transition period to the uniform system. So that's one of the problems.
Yeah, Todd, I think obviously we're going to spend quite a bit of time talking about transport, but just that issue from a political viewpoint and a community viewpoint going forward of a sustainably funded local government unit like Auckland, we are constrained by two realities. One, the community will not go much beyond the rate of inflation in terms of what they're prepared to pay as an average increase in the rating base every year. So 2.5% to 3.5% average rate increases is about it. And then the second thing is you can only borrow so much. We've got a debt level at this point in time of about $6.2 billion, and we projected over 10 years with reasonable investments in a basic transport system to be out at about 10.5 and 11, and that's prudent. So outside of that, the reality of how you seriously fund all of the transport, whether it's more PT, whether it's roading, whether it's cycling, that is the challenge, and I'm saying to Aucklanders, we cannot step off that challenge.
One of the things in this debate, though, is Aucklanders are going to look at a list of projects and be asked whether they're ready to pay for them. Patrick Reynolds, do you agree that list of projects has to be built in the way it's put forward?
Well, one of the good things about the fiscal constraints at the moment is a tremendous amount of discipline has had to be forced on Auckland Transport. All the fat is gone, I mean, or is going. So I think there's a tremendous discipline on AT financially at the moment. My argument is that this is not the case with NZTA. If those projects that NZTA are funding in Auckland went through the same rigorous process, we would have a different list from NZTA. They certainly would be extending the Northern Busway. They certainly would be building the North-Western Busway right now as they widen it. And there's absolutely no reason that the City Rail Link is not of national significance. This is an arbitrary idea that only things with rubber wheels can have national significance.
So, Len Brown, you're the one who talks to the government. I think what Patrick Reynolds is saying, that the money is there, but NZTA's got its own view of the world that it's funding, and Auckland's got, in some cases, slightly different view of the world. Can that be married up? Can you?
Oh, absolutely.
I know you want
it
to be.
Well, and I think you've got to be really confident in this space, Todd. And that confidence has borne some fruit really over the last 4 years in terms of the negotiations we've had with government to bring them from a fairly singular roading focus with a little bit of public transport to the Prime Minister's statement where he made a commitment to CRL on behalf of the government. And now strong commitments around cycleways, which is great to see, and new funding coming forward on that, an ability to invest half in electric trains. So, you know, I think it's important to recognise that there is a gap, that we need to really make that gap meet. Now, the gap is just not about the politicians, just not about me or our council or the government and their various view. It's also about the agencies. So MOT, NZTA and Auckland Transport, the three agencies. My work at the beginning of this year is very much about bringing the minister, his government, our council, NZTA, Auckland Transport and MOT into the same room to get a comprehensive agreement around what we want to fund, the projects that we want to move forward on, how well they are integrated, and try and put something in place for the next 10 years. Now, that would be based on the basis that, you know, we really agree a package going forward.
David Chand, can that come together, do you think?
Well, it remains to be seen. I think there is a mindset problem amongst some ministers about dealing with Auckland. That's my view, and that's one part of the Royal Commission's recommendations which hasn't operated the way we thought it might. But, I mean, we know that government approval is required to a new fuel tax increase or to charging for motorway use.
And they've certainly got their own, the government's got their own fuel taxes rolling along, 3 cents a year.
Indeed. Yeah. But, I mean, they're going to have to make a decision as to whether they're going to come to the party or not. And the point is that the draft budget, which is just coming out, clearly indicates that if this
is the council's 10-year plan.
The council's 10-year budget clearly indicates that if this money is not forthcoming, there's a whole list of all the things which will not take place, which will not be able to be funded. And the government will have to look at that and it's a pretty tough call for the government, perhaps. But if people look at the list of things which won't be done in the absence of this funding, then there will be pressure. There is pressure on the government to make a decision.
Yeah, the thing is that Auckland is different. This is not an argument for Auckland needing more pro rata than the rest of the country, but rather it needs to be spent differently. Auckland is our only city of scale. It needs city-shaped solutions to city-shaped problems. The problem with, say, the GPS, the government policy statement, is it's for the entire country. It's for Southland as well as for Auckland. And really we need the government to show that it understands that it has a different area up here. It's also the place in the country that's growing like Topsy. So there's demand that needs to be, unfulfilled demand that really needs to be met.
One of those briefing papers from NZTA and MOT to the incoming ministers did point out actually that Auckland is now in a territory where it's got to such a scale that the solutions for Auckland are going to be expensive. Len Brown, that's the political side that you're going to have to lead.
They're not
isn't
expensive
it?
Pro rata, though. You know, a highway through an empty countryside is incredibly expensive for the number of people that use it.
Yeah, that's the reason why we are now having this discussion, that the community get a very, very clear black and white view of the challenge of our population growth, of the lack of investment over the decades in all of our transport system, and of course, including public transport, and then going forward. What gives us some comfort, though, is the degree to which the maxim, you build it and they'll use it, is really starting to work around public transport. And, you know, we see with rail increases in patronage there, 17-18% per year, something like 1 million extra rail trips a year. I mean, 2 million a year, rather, 1 million every 6 months. Yep. So that type of uptake of the public transport build is great. It's critical on the basis that, you know, we will move forward and we're looking to decongest our roads, and whether or not that happens through an alternate funding is something for the community to decide this year. But to bring the government on board, show them the best evidence, let's make our judgment on data and not sentiment. I think this is the way for us to go forward, and I would be very pleased to see the government as a part of that type of joint program, exactly the same as we've done with the Housing Accord.
I mean, you're nodding there, David Chan. Do you see logic or a rational argument winning the day on this one?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I hope so. I mean, remember, the sheer scale of what we're talking about here, it's enormous. Mm. We're going to have 2 million people here by 2035 and 2 million and 2.5 million by 2040, I think, whatever the figures are. But this is huge. And we're talking about a total investment program of $105 billion over 30 years. And so we're talking about a $12 billion gap out of 105. There's $93 billion is, you know, already there in a sense. It sounds a lot, and it is a lot, but the total scale of the it's part of a very, very much bigger picture, which is $105 billion, which is not only just the City Rail Loop, which is only $2 billion,
hopefully less than that too. At some point.
Maybe less. Yeah. But other things, the East-West Corridor, Amity, the New Harbour Crossing, additional motorway lanes, cycleways, all this sort of stuff, it's part of a much, much bigger picture.
We need to have discussions about value as well as about cost, don't we? That's really the key.
For the rest of the country, I mean, David Chan, one of the things you said that was recommended in 2007, but it hasn't happened, is higher petrol tax to be shared across local government. And that's actually part of what one of the Auckland options is, that the higher petrol tax would not just be Auckland, but would be nationwide and help fund local governments nationwide.
Yes.
But, you know, you seem to like the motorway user charge as a solution for Auckland.
Look, I think this can be talked through. I mean, the motorway user charge is perfectly feasible technically. Lots of other countries do it. No particular problems.
Singapore,
technically,
best example.
Auckland was given the power to levy a regional petrol tax by the previous government, which was taken away by this government. Now, that could be considered as well as an option. It need not necessarily be a national one.
Are there other ways, I don't know whether this is what you've been referring to, Len Brown, other ways of dealing with this? You've been talking of trying to have conversations with the government about funding packages of projects, sounds like a bulk funding approach. Is that a way to get a mix of projects in rather than arm wrestling project by project?
Look, the sort of thing that I'm really wanting us to work together on is something not dissimilar to what's been achieved in Denmark. In Denmark, central and local governments there were able to formulate an agreement or accord for 10 years worth of funding and building an agreed transport program. From my view, we're a country about the same size. We can't afford to waste a single dollar in the most important infrastructure work we do, which is around transportation. And so with our money and the government's money together with that of the private sector, with all of the parties basically in together, we need to agree a pathway forward, the timing around that, the projects that we will build, and not waste any time or any money in a way forward where you've got one government going one way and the council, you know, sort of heading down another way, and where there's not total synergy. Mm. And look, if Denmark can do it, I'm sure we can.
So someone's still got to pay for this, Patrick Reynolds. Aucklanders will be asked to try and imagine, I guess, how this would work for them. Could they dodge the charges? Could they use public transport? And yet, you know, 80% of Aucklanders are still on the bus. Well, not still, but are on the bus. They're not on the rail. They're not on the northern busway. Can Aucklanders have confidence that they could find a solution for their lives that uses the bus network, which is still evolving?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the application of bus lanes on all the main routes will be a fantastic thing that Auckland Transport is promising. Buses are the core of the network, but they are increasingly being tailored around and integrated with the rapid transit heart of it. And remember, it's rapid transit that is growing at 18%. That's the busway and rail. And the rest of the bus network is growing at 6%, 7%. So people are voting with their feet. They're choosing the fast, efficient, uncluttered, out-of-the-traffic system. That is the one that MOT and NZTA should be screaming to the government saying, this thing is growing like mad, it needs support, we should spread this everywhere, and that would decongest the roads.
Mm. At the same time, the council is, because of the financial constraints, got the squeeze on Auckland Transport, and some of those things, some of the bus interchanges, are being pushed off into the future or into the optional packages. Is that going to send a bad signal to people who are thinking, will public transport do the job instead of paying the charges?
You cannot have this discussion without recognising that we've tried to put Auckland's budget and its finances in a clearly sustainable pattern, and in particular around debt levels. That's the first thing. Secondly, the issue of whether or not we actually deal with the biggest challenge we've got, which is transport, requires a separate and clear debate. So here's what we can afford in a basic transport program, and then if we really want to deal with this, let's ring fence some form of alternative funding, channel it only for transport, agree the way forward in terms of the projects that we will build, how they'll interconnect between cycle, bus, rail, ferry and road, and then start the build and make sure the government's in on that agreement. Now, for me, that's pretty simple.
I mean, what's at stake is the productivity of the city, and that is a third of the country's economy. This is a national issue.
I mean, the rail loop, a lot of people are saying, what's in it for us? We don't live anywhere near it. And people forget the flow-on effect of this because it's an integrated transport network. So in a sense, the rail loop, even though it's a relatively small portion of the total capital budget required, is a bit of a litmus test. The second point I wanted to make, picking up the point made by the Mayor, Auckland is in a sound financial position. It has a good credit rating, manageable debt, good financial management. All of these things are confirmed by the ratings agencies. Unfortunately, the position has not been helped by the New Zealand Herald, which has published incompetent and misleading stuff about Auckland being broke and financial mess, none of which is true. Auckland. So we're starting this debate with Auckland being in a relatively sound financial position.
I wonder, going back to the work that your group did in 2007, David Shand, where you came up with a couple of ideas that would supplement local government, whether they might actually be options for Auckland. One, as you mentioned, was the petrol tax, and the other one was the government paying rates. And by my calculations, that would pay maybe a fifth each year of what Auckland is trying to get out of this system. I mean, are those ideas still worth trying to revive?
Oh, I think they're still relevant. And local government New Zealand has a task force at the moment, yep, which is looking at this whole question. And certainly the payment of full rates on Crown land, which would have a big impact on Auckland. Yeah, but I mean, if you're talking about the universities and all that sort of thing, which cause so much traffic congestion and so much traffic generation, it's perfectly feasible to do that, and perfectly feasible to have an Auckland City only petrol tax, in my view.
What David is referenced as the work that local government is presently doing. It's just not an Auckland challenge, it's a challenge across the nation. I mean, even the small towns are struggling with how you replace stormwater and wastewater systems that have aged and need replacing on very small rating bases. So the challenges around funding local government are consistent across the country, but for us, we've got a challenge that relates to growth.
Patrick Reynolds, do you think Auckland is going to be, you guys do a lot of work on transport ideas, but do you think Aucklanders in general are going to be able to debate this on the issue and it not becoming a political, do I like the mayor, do I like the government, whether the merits of the argument will win through?
I mean, some people are desperately trying to do that, and they're desperately trying to make the City Rail Link and Len Brown as synonymous, which they're not. Unfortunately, sorry, Mayor, but the City Rail Link procedure...
So it goes back 95 years, actually.
Exactly. Of course it'll be politicised. But the general tenet that we get through, especially through our readership, is that people understand what's at stake, and they are prepared to take some pain, so long as it's not looking stupid, so long as the money isn't being wasted in an absurd manner.
Mr. Brown, so is this happening as part of the local plan consultation, probably something that in the past the average Aucklander has never taken any notice of at all? Is that the right way to deal with an issue of this size?
Oh, I think with the uniting of Auckland, Aucklanders are absolutely focused on the planning work that we're doing as the first United Council. The unitary plan consultation, last year and the year before, was plenty of evidence of that. Over 25,000 people turning up at public meetings and something like 50,000 people submitting. They are totally engaged. And look, I've fought two elections now on the issue of transportation is the number one issue, and the fact that we were going to have this debate brought through with the options and alternatives from the independent advisory panel have done a great job, and Aucklanders are absolutely ready for this debate, and they're serious about it. Whenever we talk about a motorway charge or whenever we talk about a petrol tax, they know and understand what's at stake here. They are emotionally connected here. This is about their heart, not their head. You know, people sitting in motorways, jammed motorways, sitting in a car park on the motorway, boy, that makes them really fired up. And so I think that we will have significant engagement. Tens of thousands of people will be engaged in this debate and will make formal submissions. And yes, the LTP is there. But this debate has been coming for 4 years, and I'm looking forward to a great outcome.
Well, I hope the Mayor's right about the possibility of a rational debate. The rates inquiry didn't give me much encouragement in the sense that we had a bunch of complainers, basically, with nothing constructive to say in many cases. I think there's possibly a generation gap here. I think we need to particularly mobilise younger voters in terms of who I think are much more sympathetic to the idea of building infrastructure,
well,
to public transport.
They
have to live in it, exactly.
Unlike some of the other vocal people.
So I hope the Mayor's right, but I'm just a bit nervous that it may degenerate into the usual complaints industry about the level of rates.
Just get a view from each of you. Where is this going to end up? Is there going to be a rational debate and the government will respond to it in some kind of rational way? Or might the government come up with its own alternative that it perhaps feels more comfortable with in the meantime? Patrick Reynolds, well, how do you see it playing out?
I mean, I'm optimistic. I think it really has to. We have to. I don't see what the options for the government are other than dealing with reality as it is on the ground in Auckland. I mean, I don't see another option, really.
Len Brown, government says it's staying out of this, it's going to wait and listen.
And I think that was actually, I mean, I talked specifically to the Prime Minister and to Minister Bridges and his colleagues and said, look, just let us have this debate for a start. And, you know, for some of them, the options, you know, aren't really tenable. But we are having the debate on the basis that they have agreed that this is something we should do. And I think that's a good sign. Secondly, I don't think that this will be a quiet debate. This will be noisy. And that's great. I want to make sure it's as well informed as it can be. And I am really hopeful and reasonably confident that Aucklanders are going to make a positive decision here for a way forward. One, not just to let things continue to meander along in a basic situation, but they will want to invest. And on that basis, I hope they make a positive choice around the options so that we can go back to the government and then proceed from that point.
David Shand, you're still waiting for your 2007 recommendations to be implemented. What do you think is going to happen here?
Well, I mean, clearly, as the Mayor says, the government will adopt a wait-and-see attitude on this consultation process. But nevertheless, they are committed to the economic development of Auckland. Auckland is our only city of size and so on. Innovation and all these sorts of things which are important to make Auckland really a world-class city. That impacts not just on Auckland, but on New Zealand. I mean, that's a very important point to make. And if the government is serious about economic development, it's going to have to address questions of congestion in Auckland. And the options that are put out indicate what will happen if the funding is not made available. And you'll be sitting in traffic jams, and you won't be able to get your goods moved across Auckland, which is very... it will put pressure on the government, and they will have to come up with a decision pretty soon after the consultation is finished, in my view.
Gentlemen, thanks for joining us. I've been talking to the Mayor of Auckland, Len Brown, Patrick Reynolds from the Transport Blog website, and David Shand, who chaired the 2007 Local Government Rates Inquiry. I'm Todd Nile, and that's Outspoken.